Today is Saturday, October 16th. Climate change has become one of the most divisive political issues facing America. It did not used to be this way, though. Gallup surveys show in the late 90s, about half of both Republicans and Democrats believed we were already seeing the effects of global warming, and many in both parties also blamed human activity. But opinions have become more and more divided over the last two decades. So what happened? We're talking about it with renowned climate scientist Catherine Hayhoe. She says it was her faith as an evangelical Christian that first inspired her to focus on climate change as a career, and later to write the new book, Saving Us, A Climate Scientist's Case for Hope and Healing in a Divided World. Hayhoe is also a professor at Texas Tech University, the chief scientist for the Nature Conservancy, and the host of the PBS digital series Global Weirding. She's been named one of Time's 100 Most Influential People, the United Nations Champion of the Environment, and the World Evangelical Alliance's Climate Ambassador. She doesn't shy away from saying climate change is real, but she also focuses on finding common ground and calls on all political parties to pitch in with possible solutions. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, where we provide all the day's news in 10 minutes. I'm Erica Mandy. It's now time for today's Special Edition Saturday. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for coming on the Newsworthy.
Thank you for having me.
So even though most scientists agree about climate change, why do you think it's become politically divisive here in the U.S.?
Well, become is the key word there because it didn't used to be. Back in the late 90s, which is not that long ago, just over 20 years ago, you would ask a Republican and a Democrat what they thought about global warming, and you would get pretty much the same answer. So what changed? Not the science. We've known since the 1800s that digging up and burning coal back then and oil and gas today produces heat-trapping gases that are building up in the atmosphere, wrapping an extra blanket around the planet, causing it to warm. What changed was the fact that those impacts have come home to roost. They are no longer a future issue. They are here and they are now. Our wildfires are burning greater area. Hurricanes are bigger and more damaging. Our extreme heat is more intense. Wherever we live, we're seeing the impacts. And that means we need to do something about it. And that's why it got polarized, because 90 companies are responsible for 2/3 of carbon emissions since the dawn of the industrial era. 20 companies are responsible for 1/3 of the carbon emissions since the 1960s. And if you look at the list of the richest companies in the world, you will see many of the same names. Their bottom line depends on keeping us using as much fossil fuel as possible, as long as possible. A lot of politicians' support on both sides of the aisle comes from the fossil fuel industry, which means they have a vested interest in enabling those industries to continue to sell those fossil fuels as long as possible. And there's an amazing book and a movie, if you prefer watching documentaries, called Merchants of Doubt. It explains with names and numbers exactly how and who this happened, to the point where now climate change is the most politicized issue in the whole country, even ahead of coronavirus, if you can believe it.
But to be clear, I mean, you're a climate scientist. There's no doubt in your mind about what climate change is doing.
There is no doubt in any legitimate scientist's mind. I can literally count on the fingers of one hand the people who are actual scientists who say it isn't that bad and we don't need to fix it. We've known since the 1800s that this thing is real. And today we see the impacts wherever we live. We scientists are, and this is a real number, 99.9999% sure. And that is as sure as a scientist gets. And here's the thing, though. A thermometer is not Democrat or Republican. A wildfire does not knock on your door and ask you who you voted for in the last election before it burns down your house. This issue matters to every single one of us, and we need solutions from across the political spectrum. We don't only need solutions from one half. We need free market solutions, bipartisan solutions, libertarian solutions. We need everybody to be pitching in with ideas on solutions to this problem.
So in addition to being a climate scientist, you're an evangelical Christian. You're open about that. You've talked about how some religious believers are resistant to what the science shows about climate change. So why do you think that is? And how does your own faith take part in those conversations?
I'm a climate scientist because I'm a Christian. I was not planning to study climate science. I was planning to study astrophysics. And in fact, that's what my undergraduate degree is in. But when I took a class on climate change to round out my breadth requirements, that's where I learned that climate change is profoundly unfair. it disproportionately affects the poorest and most vulnerable people, whether it's right here where I live in Texas, the black and brown neighborhoods that lost power the longest during our winter freeze, which was made worse by a warming Arctic, or whether it's the small shareholders or farmers on the other side of the world who their harvests are being wiped out by longer droughts and more intense heat waves and shifting rainfall patterns. So when I found that out, as a Christian, I believe that we are called to care for others and love others. And I thought, how can I say that I'm doing this if I'm not doing everything I can to help fix climate change? So it was a tremendous shock to me moving to the States, I'm Canadian, to find out that many people who say they shared my faith thought this thing was a complete hoax. But when you dig into it, it turns out it is nothing to do with Christian theology that makes people reject the reality of climate change and the urgency of action.
You've predicted there will be a moment when the effects of climate change become undeniable, sort of an oh crap moment. Scientifically speaking, what does that moment look like?
That moment looks like a world where it seems like everything is either on fire or underwater. Because what's happening is climate change is loading the weather dice against us. We know as long as, you know, this planet has existed, we've had hurricanes and floods. And, you know, as long as there's been forests, there's been wildfires, right? We know all of that is part of life on this planet. But what climate change is doing is loading those dice against us. So our wildfires are burning much greater area today. One out of every 8 acres in California has been burned in the last 10 years, just as one horrifying example. We know that our hurricanes are getting stronger and they're dumping a lot more rain. 40% of the rain that fell during Hurricane Harvey would not have occurred if the same hurricane had happened 100 years ago, which it easily could have. We know that our heat waves are getting much more likely. The devastating heat wave that we saw across Western North America this past summer, where it was 118 degrees in Portland, and a small Canadian town of Lytton broke the all-time Canadian high temperature record 1 day, 2 days, 3 days in a row, and then on the fourth day, it was mostly burned down by a wildfire. We know that that heat wave was at least 150 times more likely because of climate change. And this is happening more and more and more. And it is disrupting supply chains. It is destroying homes and communities. Wildfires are choking the air with smoke that lead directly to health impacts that even make COVID worse as well. We are already seeing the beginning of that oh crap moment. But when it hits, when every part of our lives is touched, when every part of this country is simultaneously being touched by the impacts of climate change in sequence or at the same time, by then it's too late. It's like you're being loaded into the ambulance to go to the hospital with a heart attack. And you're saying, no, it's okay. I will take the doctor's advice. I will change my diet. I will exercise. And I will even take the prescription medicine that the doctor recommended. It's too late. You're going to the hospital at that point. And open heart surgery is your only option. My goal is to get us to change before we get to that point.
Still ahead, Catherine Hayhoe gets a lot of threats and nasty messages for her work. She shares her theory for why climate change can inspire anger, plus her tips for talking to others about this even when you disagree, and whether our individual everyday choices actually make a difference in the fight against global warming. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you have that nagging feeling that something is off or that something is stopping you from being your happiest self, please know you're not alone and it doesn't have to be that way. Whether it's the pandemic, work stress, family conflict, trauma, or anything else that's interfering with your life, BetterHelp can assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. They have counselors who are specialized in a wide variety of areas, and everything you tell them stays completely confidential. You always connect in a safe and private online environment. And it's convenient and easy. You can send a message to your counselor anytime from the comfort of your own home. Plus, schedule weekly video or phone sessions if you want. It's also more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a Newsworthy listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/newsworthy. Join more than a million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/newsworthy. This episode is also brought to you by Rothy's. What do you get when you combine comfort, style, and sustainability? You get Rothy's shoes. Yes, Rothy's not only has new, soft, plush, and super cute merino wool styles as part of its exclusive autumn collection, but all of their shoes are also sustainably made with recycled materials like plastic water bottles. They're also fully machine washable, so we're talking about a win-win-win here. I already have a pair of their merino wool flats that I adore, and Rothy's is always first on my list when I'm ready for something new. Oh, and good news for the guys listening. Rothy's shoes are not just for women anymore. That's right. Rothy's now sells men's sneakers and men's driving loafers. In fact, Forbes calls Rothy's men's shoes a, quote, travel must-have. So to help you welcome fall season in style, Rothy's is doing something special. That's right. They gave us the chance to share this super rare opportunity with our listeners for a limited time. So right now, you can get $20 off your first purchase at rothys.com/newsworthy. That's Rothy's, spelled R-O-T-H-Y-S, rothys.com/newsworthy. Head to rothys.com/newsworthy to find your new favorites today. Okay, now back to my conversation with Catherine Hayhoe. You've even received threats from people who reject the science. What's that experience been like for you, and what motivates you to keep speaking about this?
I receive hate mail every day, every single day. Sometimes it's multiple times a day. Sometimes it's just a few times. It might be as simple as someone saying, you have no idea what you're talking about. Don't you know the world has been warmer? And of course, then I say, well, how do you know it's been warmer? It's because we scientists found out and we told you. But more often, it's worse than that. Idiot, libtard, whore, handmaiden of the Antichrist. These are all things that I'm called on a pretty regular basis. Do people wake up in the morning and just decide to hate on someone because they're a scientist? No. What we do is we perceive facts that contradict what we believe to be true as opposing a threat to who we are and what we stand for. So because of that, that's why people see climate science as a threat, because they are told, they've been deliberately told that there's no good solutions to climate change, that the only solutions are to destroy the economy, to throw everybody out of work, to stop driving, to stop flying, to stop eating, to stop having children. People are literally told that there is no good solution to climate change. But if we say, sure, it's a big problem and it affects the poorest and most marginalized the most, but I don't want to fix it, that doesn't make us sound like a very good person. So instead, we look for any reason to justify why we can't fix it. And that's where we look for the science-y and the religious-y sounding objections we hear so often, like it's just volcanoes or God's in control, so why does it matter? So how do we tackle it? We don't tackle it with dumping more facts on people. We tackle it by talking about the real solutions, the solutions that grow jobs and grow the economy, clean up our air and our water, address the injustices in this world by providing energy for people who don't have access to fossil fuels, but they have access to a lot of sun and a lot of wind, and solutions that are good for all of us, for our health, for our kids, for the safety of our homes, real climate solutions we can all get on board with.
When we're talking to just a friend or family member who has a different take on the topic, what's the best way to go about that?
Well, that's exactly why I wrote my book, Saving Us, to answer a question I get all the time, which is, how do I talk about this? We don't talk about it by arguing. We don't talk about it by beginning with something we disagree with people on. We have to begin a conversation with something we agree on. We might both be parents who are proud of their kids. We might both be worried about our health. We might both have military experience or really enjoy skiing or birding or knitting or wine. I've started conversations with all of those things. Start with something we agree on. Connect the dots to how climate change matters to whatever it is that we both care about. And believe me, these days it's pretty easy to do so. And then always bring up a positive, constructive solution that you might be doing in your own life, that your place of work might be doing, that a school might be doing. I love collecting stories of what happens in Texas. Like, Texas has the biggest army base in the U.S. by land area. And that army base is 43% powered by clean energy. Why? Because it saves money. Millions of taxpayer dollars are being saved because we're so good at wind and solar energy here in Texas. I think most relatives would get on board with something like that. And there's examples in every single state of the same type of thing.
The changes that people can make just in their daily lives, maybe not on the same scale as what you just mentioned, like using energy efficient appliances or just recycling something, does that really make a difference, what we individuals do?
We can do so much in our personal lives. Food waste is a huge source of heat-trapping gas emissions. Beef is also a big source. So more plant-based recipes, eating more fish, not wasting as much food. I go grocery shopping a lot more often. That way I get more fresh veggies anyways. Switching out our light bulbs, considering an efficient car or a hybrid or a plug-in, looking to see if solar panels might be reasonable for our area and maybe we could get a good loan. All of these actions do help, but you know what they help the most at? They help because they change us. They give us something that we can be excited about to talk about, and they can be contagious with others as well. People often say, to fix this thing, do we need individual change or system change? And my answer is yes, we need both of them, because systems are made up of people. And if I'm looking at food waste in my house, and I might be looking at the cafeteria at my school thinking, I wonder what they do with their food waste. Maybe I could ask somebody about that. Do they compost? Do they have programs to address that? Also, have they considered more plant-based recipes? Where do they source their meat? Is it sustainably grazed or factory farmed? And what about the light bulbs? Have we switched out our dang light bulbs yet? If not, why are we not doing that? You get a payback within 3 months. So when we do things ourselves, it makes us more conscious of how we can talk to our church, how we can talk to our kids' school, how we can talk to our neighbors and our friends and our family, how we can talk to our city councilors about what we together could do too.
Any final thought or final takeaway?
Yes. To care about climate change, we often think that we have to be a certain type of person. We have to be an environmentalist or a Democrat or a liberal or somebody who cares about science. That's not the case at all. Not anymore. To care about climate change today, we could be a mom or a dad. We could be somebody who lives in Houston, Miami, Seattle, or New York. We could be somebody who loves hunting or fishing or hiking or kayaking. We only have to be one thing to care about climate change, and that one thing is a person living on planet Earth. And as far as I know, if you're listening to this, you're that.
And again, you can get Catherine Hayhoe's new book. It's called Saving Us, A Climate Scientist's Case for Hope and Healing in a Divided World. We have a link to it in our show notes. We also link to the Gallup surveys on climate change opinions that we had referenced at the beginning of the episode. Thank you so much for listening today. Be sure to join us again each Monday through Friday for our 10-minute daily news roundups. Until then, have a great weekend.